Stephen, let's start with Fairfax. Was this expected? 550 jobs.
Well, it was expected if you looked around the world at traditional classified dependent newspapers. So the New York Times, the Washington Post, all over the world, they've been bleeding jobs. And it's almost like Fairfax has been operating in a parallel universe, declaring that they are the future of media and they have got all these internet strategies and they're not affected. And we had their profit result last week, when ordinarily you always do these things in the profit result. So it seems very odd to then come out a week after your profit and
say... Because the profit wasn't that bad, was it?
It was up, but the share price was a bit insipid as a result, whereas today the share price at one point was over $3. It was stacking on many tens of millions of dollars of value as the market rewarded...
People losing their jobs.
Don't you
find that? Isn't that the thing about what you look at, the most frustrating part, that you just... I get really... cross about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very heartless, but it's the way of the market that the bigger number that a CEO announces in terms of the headcount reduction, axing people, the more they're rewarded in the share price. And it's a very short-term approach. It doesn't sort of look at the long-term issues. Now, if you take 180 journalists out of Fairfax, concentrated around The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, I mean, that's Fairfax euphemistically calls it a business improvement program today. I think it's a journalistic degradation program, and that's a big hit.
Yeah.
I can't remember in 20 years in journalism a bigger day where journalists got taken out like this. And admittedly, it's not all happening today. It's not forced terminations today. But this is a very, very big hit at Australian journalism. And it just reflects, for every dollar that SEEK makes, they're a billion-dollar company, their shares keep going up, their profit keeps going up. That is just straight off Fairfax's bottom line because, classified ads have migrated to the internet.
Yes.
And it's a big challenge for everyone around the world who loves journalism. And, the public spirit and public benefit of good journalism is how is it funded. And, a lot of people are coming to the view that it's best funded in a not-for-profit sense. I mean, I think, with the death of The Bulletin and Channel 9, being butchered and, the best journalism in Australia now, I think, resides with Auntie in the ABC.
Yes.
And even with its, we've only got 800 or 900 million, the ABC's ratings are going up, the great programs, the Four Corners, the Late Lines, the 7:30 reports are all still there and getting more important for our democracy with each passing day as the commercial media grapples with this seismic challenge of funding good journalism in the era of the internet when you haven't got the rivers of gold from a 2-inch thick Saturday Age coming in and bankrolling large teams of investigative reporters.
That's right, and the question has always been that where does the money come from? And I think the majority of people sort of thought that perhaps they were just paying for it. The $2.40 or whatever it is that you pay for your paper was the thing that was keeping the journalists in their job, which of course it could never have done because you just don't pay enough for your paper to meet all of those. So it was always about classifieds. It was always about ads and, as you say, with them going to other means, to other ways of distributing that information, then they've had to look at something. I think it's a shame. It's a sad day.
I think that that SEEK should announce the SEEK Investigative Weekly and actually launch into journalism. You have seen a few of those internet moguls around the world sort of make philanthropic donations to journalism, feeling guilty about having butchered the funding of good journalism. But a lot of these advertising models, I mean, Google is the ultimate killer advertising model. It has eaten everyone's lunch. And so much of the advertising spend has now gone to Google and they don't fund any journalism.
No.
So, it's a sad day. I mean, I'm not going to blast Fairfax because if I was the CEO down there, you'd probably have to do this. I mean, at the end of the day, when you've got tens of millions coming off your revenue base, it's irresponsible to not do something. So I don't think, I'm not disagreeing with the business strategy. I'm just lamenting it as a very sad day.
For the same reasons. What is the future then? Where does this end? Do we end up without newspapers, without independent newspapers and good journalism in the future in terms of the print form?
Well, I was thinking about it. I heard John Brumby give a speech a couple of weeks ago when he said Victoria has stacked on 1 million extra people in the last 7 years and the sales of the newspapers has fallen over that time. So I think Victoria will always be able to sustain two newspapers. I mean, the Herald Sun is still the highest penetration newspaper in the world. It goes to 35% of households, and it sells 530,000 copies a day or thereabouts. And there's no other paper in the world that, in a community of, what, 4.5-5 million, gets to that number of people. And but it's still falling, even though the population is growing substantially. So I think over time, if it was really going to hit hard, you might see, you know, the Age in 20 or 30 years coming down to not every day. And maybe that would be the way it might ultimately play out. But there are more people reading The Age than ever before because, you know, they win the online traffic figures by the length of the Strait. And so more people know the masthead and receive information from The Age every day. They're all around the world. Australians read The Age's website. But where's the dollars around it? And that's the fundamental challenge. And I think that really expensive, you know, the foreign correspondent type gigs, you won't see Fairfax with large numbers of international bureaus over time. It's just too expensive an endeavour.
Major shift. Unfortunate one. It's 11 to 6, Stephen Mayne with you this afternoon and with me, Lindy Burns at 774 ABC Melbourne, shareholder activist that he is. What do you make of the announcements today? We've got Toll. We've got Macquarie Communications, Woolies came out, Foster's.
I'm going to make a big statement here.
Go on, I love it when you make a big statement.
Today, we've had three companies report losses of more than $100 million, which has never happened before, I don't think, in Australian corporate history. Toll Holdings lost $950 million for the year, primarily because they wrote off $1.3 billion on getting rid of their stake in Virgin Blue. Vlad Property Group dropped $248 million, writing off silly acquisitions in Europe. And Macquarie Communications Group, which owns the satellite towers which are broadcasting our conversation to the world, they announced a bottom line loss of $103 million, mainly because of some currency and hedging interest rate issues they had. But this means that three companies have done on the one day, and so far for 2007-2008, that means 17 companies have reported losses of more than $100 million. And the previous record was, I think, 15 companies reporting losses of more than $100 million in 2001-2002 after the US recession and the dot-com crash. And we've got 4 days to go, and we still haven't heard from many companies in the Babcock and Brown stable. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear Orco's going to take the season gold with a loss of more than $1 billion on Friday. So I think there's a chance we'll finish up with 20 to 25 companies reporting a loss of more than $100 million, which is an extraordinary record. And we're also seeing more CEOs bite the dust this year than I can ever recall. So, the likes of Foster's, Lendlease, Santos, NAB, Westpac, Orco, Babcock, Macquarie Bank, MFS, Centro, Oxiana, Challenger have all replaced their CEOs. Some have been forced out because of performance, others have just retired. But we are seeing a really quite dramatic turnover at the top in corporate Australia, and we're seeing unprecedented losses as the credit crunch sorts the wheat from men from the boys.
The men from the sheep and the chaff and all that business.
Yeah, I'll get it right.
No, I love a mixed metaphor. So are they being replaced by people who are ostensibly going to do the same job, or particularly the ones who have been forced out, or are they coming in with a slightly more conservative approach?
Well, it's a variety. In the case of, say, Challenger, which announced their departure of their CEO yesterday, Mike Tilley got paid $8 million last year, which was regarded as excessive, and he's been replaced by the finance director, who was his underling. Mm-hmm. Babcock and Brown punted the CEO and the executive chairman, and again, the finance director's come up. Now, you would have thought Babcock, having destroyed more money in the history of funds management than anyone else, maybe would have looked outside to someone apart from their finance director. Sometimes when you're in dire straits, you can't get someone to work for you, so you've got to recruit from within. So, I mean, but there were some good profits today. Like Woolworths powered ahead and made a 25% increase in profit to $1.63 billion. Which a cynic would say, you know, just once again reflects their huge market power. And the statistic I really liked in the Woolworths profit was that they have inventories on their balance sheet, stock, of $3 billion, and they have payables of $4.8 billion. So they're still running their virtual supermarket where they don't have any stock. They've well and truly sold all of their suppliers' goods before they've paid for it. And that's just market power. Brutal market power.
Because they know they can get away with it.
Well, that's right. So that's why you're seeing this massive takeover bids in the dairy industry at the moment, where this Japanese brewing company, Kirin, is bought National Foods last year and is now buying dairy farmers. And they need to get tough and get strong to take on Woolies, because Woolies has just gone out in the milk market and said, We'll have all your milk and we'll brand it ourselves with our own Woolworths brand, Select, and just a home brand. And a lot of companies are finding their brands are being taken from them by the likes of Woolworths, who are just building their house brands. And so the argument goes that the dairy industry needs to become a mega company to negotiate with Woolworths, and that's one of the reasons why this merger is going through.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I reckon I'm not alone in this, that when I buy milk, I don't think I've ever looked at what the label is on the front. Do you think that? I don't think I'm alone in that. It's just sort of milk has always been milk.
I always buy the Sheffield Shield milk because I want to support the brands, because I disagree with Woolworths and the way they take people's brands from them.
Right.
And I think Australians don't like the middleman.
No.
And there's no bigger middleman than the supermarket duopoly. Now, they're meant to be there to allow people to sell their goods to customers, not to say you can't
we're
have a brand. We're going to have every role, and we're going to make $1.6 billion, and we're going to have negative stock of $1.8 billion because we're so big and strong. And now they're getting into credit cards, Woolworths, can you believe? I mean, as if we haven't got enough credit cards as it is with 14 million out there, then now they're launching their own little credit card, which for mine, in an era of tight credit and rising unemployment, last thing I want to see is Woolworths offering their customers
credit
cards.
So you end up then with a company that has the raw product, well doesn't make the milk or run the farms, but kind of does, also is the middle person, as in the conduit between the raw product and the consumer, and then you buy that with their money.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
So,
that's enormously clever, and we're falling for it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, of course, Woolies are Australia's biggest poker machine company as well, 11,000 pokies out there. That division was up 20-25% as well. So, look, from a shareholder point of view, great result, Woolies. Terrific full marks chaps. But there are other issues, I think, around that.
Rio,
it's lazy $6 billion for the half. Rio Tinto, their profit, so they're making $1 billion after tax. A month at the moment, which is quite nice, and an interesting jousting with the federal government. Wayne Swan, very bizarrely, coming out a couple of hours before the closing ceremony in Beijing and saying he's approved the Chinese government buying their 11% stake in Rio Tinto. And the reason this was bizarre is that they bought the shares on the London market. So the idea that Wayne Swan can sit there in Canberra and say, tell people who can buy shares on the London market, is very odd. But he's announced this, and he's also told the Chinese they can't have a director unless he gives them the say-so, which is very strange, given that there's only two Australians on the 15-man Rio board. So no one seems to have given a stuff when Rio's become completely London company, run out of London, with very few Australians on the board and only 15% Australian ownership. But the Chinese government want to buy 11% and become the biggest shareholder.
And suddenly
you can't buy any more without my say-so, even though it's in London. And you can't have a director, one out of 15, even though there's only two Aussies on the board.
So do they have to listen to him?
Well, they've agreed to all this.
They have?
So, and I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to China being a dictatorship and a communist dictatorship, and they get treated differently because of that. And Australian companies can't go and buy up Chinese companies. So there are special circumstances. But given they're our biggest source of foreign investment at the moment and our biggest trading partner, every last utterance out of Canberra on regulating Chinese capital flows is being analysed all over about, xenophobia and the communist threat versus we must be fit, we mustn't discriminate, and really interesting set of issues. And I mean, tough gig for Wayne Swan to work through the nuances of all this.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks, Lindy.
Hello, Derek.
It's nice that it's nice that Stephen worked through all the nuances of that for us too.
Yes, isn't he good?
Yes, it's
lovely to work.
I'd still be all this stuff about how you go about working with someone whose politics you disagree with but whose money you want.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
And
keeping your economy flying along.
Well, the thing about demonstrating how things can work better and differently if government steps out of the sort of area that government's got its fingers all over in China. It's sort of...
Well, it's like that Rupert Murdoch book about him trying to get work, trying to get his foot in the door in China. And the whole thing was about he was so against so much of what was going on, treated abysmally, but worse than he's ever been treated in the whole world, and couldn't care less because there were so many people there.
Yeah, well, that's the big argument, is I'm on a panel with Bruce Dover this Friday at the Writers' Festival talking about his book on Rupert's adventures in China. And that's the best example, is you wouldn't let Rupert scratch himself in China. You wouldn't let him do anything. You shut him down. You wouldn't let him have his TV stations. Yet you want to come in here and buy all our minds up. So, Wayne Swan should say, let the great Rupert introduce the London Sun to Chinese society. I can't see that happening.
Yeah.
And let it be a two-way street.
Yeah,
at the moment, it's not.
It's not.
Because then you've got to add the You know, China's talking about change and the need for change, but how do you look after 1.3 billion people and without...
In a freewheeling way,
or you end up like Russia is at the moment, which is an absolute, you know, economic basket case with some billionaires and a lot of people who are starving still.
Buying up soccer teams. Not the starving ones.
Not the billionaires. The billionaires, yeah, for the most part.